entered the building.
Hello again, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to PTB NXT. This will be episode 17. We're back at it for another triplet of episodes of NXT TV. Let me bring in my two wonderful co-hosts, Jennifer Smith and Tim Capel. How are y'all guys? You guys?
Y'all guys? Doing good, guys.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell if I was from the South or if I was, you know, ashamed of it or, you know, what was going on there. So I kind of got stuck in the middle.
Bless you.
That's my y'all the struggle shame. We all face here in the South.
I got y'all shame there. It's been a minute, but we're back as we normally are. I think we're decently on schedule for the pod. But we have three episodes on tap tonight. So should we go straight into our names here? Tim, would you like to remind us if you have them on hand?
I do. Yeah. So currently we're you know, still working the circuit here. Jake, and your identity of Knob Vanderhuge, putting in good work. I am, of course, the illustrious Billy Polebag. Jenny, as is often the case, the most colorful, Doyle Turdwater.
Yes.
Well, how could that's a Vince Russo special right there.
Sure Griffin is.
And Taryn, yeah.
Very good. Well, with this, we have, so we're upgrading a bit. I've managed to, the front office has said that they want to communicate a bit better with us and give us a little more information, like give us more of a package to work with when we get our new gimmicks, because they feel it'll make us more successful. So aside from just giving us the name, they've decided to kind of give us an overview of the character, meaning they'll give us our finisher, which we have, of course, been perfecting in the Performance Center. They'll tell us kind of our style, what kind of wrestling style they would like us to work. And of course, are we a face? Are we a heel? A tweener? If you will, so that sort of thing. So a little bit more to work with here. So maybe it will lead us to a bit more success and, you know, give us the opportunity to go to the main roster and lose to whoever they decide we should lose to at that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeff Hardy, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeff Hardy. All right. So I'll start with mine. It seems that what they have come to me with is my new name. Now, this new one seems to I guess they're trying to make it ready-made for Vince, because a lot of these only give one name. So I guess they're just assuming when we get to the main roster, Vince is going to 86 our first name anyway. So why even bother? Yeah. So some of these are going to be smart. Single names. So I, you know, not much of a change. So I'm going to go from Knob to Thermos. So you read it.
Okay.
Thermos. Who is, sounds like he'll be a big guy, but apparently I'm going to be a high flyer. Thermos, who is a high flyer, a baby face, and my finisher is going to be the chop chop slam.
Chop chop slam.
That all sounds like a miss.
You know, I don't know. I could try and come, you know, they say you got to buy into it. You know, you can't Terry Taylor that shit and half ass it. You know, if they give you a gimmick, you got to roll with it. You can't red rooster it. I think I'll probably try and come up with like a hand motion, like a little, like, you know, the little massage motion, like the chopping massage. And I could do that to the crowd. Might get over, you know.
Yeah.
Thermos, though, definitely phallic, no doubt.
And we can't sell the chop chop slam short, even though it's difficult to say. I mean, this could be like you're a high flyer, so it can't just be like your standard scoop slam, right? It's got to be like a Michinoku driver or some kind of shit that, you know, looks really devastating and cool.
Some Young Bucks bullshit,
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, so Tim, you will be next. So you actually are going to have two names.
Oh, wow. You
are long, now going to be Jimmy Holds. What is his name?
Okay.
I like it.
Which you're going to be heel. I'd imagine this is, you know, you're going to be like a shooter type character, if I had to guess, you know, Holds, you know, amateur wrestler type of thing. A heel. Your style, this is odd. I'm not sure what this means, but it says that your style is veteran, whatever the fuck that means.
Oh, I have a veteran style.
Any idea what that might mean?
Somewhat Dutch Mantell-ish offense, I feel like.
Very Dutch offense.
Yeah.
Dutch baseball offense.
Now, you know what it is? I figured it out. Jimmy Holds is, you remember Deuce and Domino, right? From
yes,
early 2000s SmackDown. So he's like one of those like 50s greaser throwback guys. Mm-hmm. And that's why he wrestles a veteran style. I mean, you know, it's the 50s. He's in there grappling with Gorgeous George. Of course, he's a heel because those dudes were always heels. And I mean, he's Jimmy Holds. So he's a shooter and he knows the holds, man.
Okay. I like it.
Yeah.
What's my finish?
I think it could work. Expert the mat work. Yeah. Because your finisher is a nice little play on the key lock, as your finisher is going to be the keyless lock.
The keyless lock.
So I guess it's like a push button on
each. Amazing.
The fuck kind of move could that be?
The
keyless lock.
Shit's a devastating hold that definitely many people will lose to, because it always works out when you have a submission as a finisher.
Right.
People are always tapping left and right. It's not like
a guy named Jeep Holt should have a submission finish, and it should be a keyless lock.
Typical of a veteran style.
You know what, though? Honestly, I feel like it literally is just a key lock, but my version of it is called the keyless lock.
Yeah, you're a heel, so yeah, you would like go up there and be like, no, it's totally different, and then you get a bunch of heat for it. Yeah, that's a good. No, that's good. But it is just, yeah, like a standard key lock that makes sense.
Totally.
All right, Jenny, you are going to be, they're very into putting the Z's. Apparently, they did some focus grouping, and you got to put Z's on the end of the last name. So, Jenny, you're going to be Biggie Slams. you're a babyface.
Okay.
Definitely, I mean, obviously, a play on Biggie Smalls. So, I'm assuming you would be a very heavy-handed Biggie Smalls caricature. Which is interesting.
Seems I could pull that off for sure.
Your gender. Your style is that you are an all-rounder, which seems a little interesting for a person called Biggie Slams. I would have thought you'd have been pure, you know, power, but I guess you're an all-rounder. So, you know, that's good. People will be maybe a little, you know, taken aback by your all-around abilities, which is good.
I feel like the all-rounder.
That is definitely the case.
The all-rounder could also be your finish.
All-rounder. Well, what they're suggesting is that your finisher will be called the chapter and verse. Can you hear Rich Brennan saying this?
Chapter
and verse from Biggie Slams.
Chapter and verse. All right.
And then Jason Albert's like, oh my god, it's so dumb. He's overselling the shit out of it. Yeah, all rounder Biggie Slams. Yeah, you'll I'm sure it'll work out.
Yeah, confidence in me and Biggie Slams.
All right, so
she's. I mean, are we doing a racially problematic thing as well? Is Jenny still a white woman, or are we changing?
I mean,
that?
I can't really change that. So
I mean, they can do this. The name generator can change all kinds of things about your person.
Look, pal, you go with the gimmick.
Make it work. I don't know if I like this upgrade, if it's changing everything.
Yeah.
Turn me into a 50s
greaser. What kind of power have you handed over, Jacob?
You know, it's an experiment. You know, we may go back to the we may go back to the old way of just giving a name and, you know, that sort of thing.
Well, I wrote down all of these details. So.
Yes. Let all the hypothetical fans tell us what we should do there.
Very good. Give us your feedback on what you think of the upgraded or possibly downgraded, who knows, theme generator. But now we have that settled. Let's move into our show. So we have three to cover. So we will start with the October 9th. So we'll start with the October 9th, 2014 episode, and we come right out of the gate with our good. We come out hype right out of the gate with Mojo Rawley, who is going to be facing Tyler Breeze, who is they're pushing very hard right now that Tyler is very pissed off about what happened at TakeOver. He's upset they didn't win. He feel like maybe he was robbed, whether he was or not. This match goes all of 12 seconds because, as Mojo's known to do, even to a man that's half his size, he goes in. And I felt this was a particularly humiliating loss for Mojo, because not only did he lose in 15 seconds as normal to a man smaller than him, but he tapped to him as Tyler Breeze, who has not, you know, been portrayed as a Jimmy Holds with a vast repertoire of submissions, puts him in a, starts hammering at his shoulder that's apparently supposed to be injured, and then puts him in an arm bar, and he taps in like 5 seconds. So, yeah, he quickly total squash by Breeze on Mojo. I went a dud on it because it was 10 seconds long. It was nothing.
Listen,
and it wasn't, and I'm not even going to say it's on Breeze either, but it wasn't. I feel like Mojo's arm couldn't move enough to make the arm bar look that impressive. His arm was just kind of barely locked in. So, yeah, you know, typical Mojo. Get his ass handed to him.
He did sell it good, though, at least.
Listen, and that's why normally I give a squash a half a star, right? Just my standard, you know, unless it's egregiously bothersome for some reason, I give it a half a star. This I did not find bothersome. In fact, I bumped it up from my standard squash rating only because I thought this actually, in the 12 seconds they were in the ring, had some psychology to it, because it was following up on the attack from the week prior, where Breeze put Mojo into the post and like stomped on his arm. So there's some actual good continuity and psychology involved. So rather than giving it a half a star, I gave it 3/4 of a star. Plus, it's Mojo losing, and that's entertaining to me.
Yeah. That was some shoot anguish he was on his face.
Yeah, yeah.
He maybe, sold that, it good. Maybe that's why.
He sold it good. He looks good in defeat.
I mean, I don't disagree, but I'm just like, I don't know. Can't do it.
Plus, it's Tyler. It's a good win for,
yeah,
you know, my boyfriend.
It's just amazing how much, like, no matter who he's facing, he just gets destroyed very quickly.
I love it.
For being such a large, you know, at first kind of intimidating looking guy. And then you have model Tyler Breeze, who just beats him in the shoulder and just submits him immediately. It's amazing. But yeah, so they're playing off the Tyler Breeze anger. And then also we're going to see, this is going to maybe lead to a more, a downtrodden Mojo. We'll see later. All right. We head now to the Jersey Triad of Enzo Cass and Carmella, who are at the PC. Of course, Carmella has been training. Enzo wants Regal to give Mella a tryout, and Regal tells him to bring her next Thursday, and he communicates this to the crew. And, of course, this is in their typical, at least this promo, this little package is in, I believe Cass is videoing this one, as he has been with these. So we will see Mella on our next episode.
Mm-hmm. The saga continues. Ordeal?
Yeah, good with it. Mean, look, I've recently become infatuated with Jersey Shore, so I feel like these segments are going to be like way better for me. But I thought this was really good.
Yeah, they are short and entertaining.
Sweet, to the point. It's you know, you get Regal in there, who's always a delight.
Yes,
bring her next week. You know, bring her next Thursday. So
I just thought Enzo was real cute too. You know, I don't know. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, they have good delivery. Like, they're not too awkward on the mic or anything. But I was thinking that you would enjoy these based on your recent. Which is funny, because I think even by this point, this would have been like the ship might have sailed on Jersey Shore, as WWE's known to do, is kind of, you know, work things in after that. Yeah. So. But hey, it all worked out. Anyway, we continue on. We now get a recap of the hot feud between Hideo Itami and the Ascension, the very weird feud, which will lead us to a match between Itami and Victor of the Ascension. Rich says that the crowd is silent because they can't believe Itami is getting pounded as we start off the match. I do not think that's what it is. I think they're silent because Victor's offense is extremely boring and this feud is not very compelling. But a good try, Rich. It's just Victor kind of doing his normal plotting offense that the Ascension are known to do until Tommy gains control. And then we cut up to the camera cuts to the top of the ramp, but we see Connor is actually at the top throwing around poor Funaki. So we get a Funaki appearance, who apparently is buddies with Itami. I think they established that a little bit by saying, like, Itami was looking for someone to be friends with since he's new to the company, blah, blah, blah.
Is that his mentor?
Yeah.
And they did that thing where Funaki's like, I've got your back now, you know, after he was struggling in his early goings here. And it's like, wow, now I've really got this covered, you know.
Fail.
But so Funaki's getting beat up. Itami actually ends up winning here with it was kind of a drop kick, but he hit him with like one leg. It was just like a pretty good looking kick, but not much of a match. We could talk about the post match in a second, what this leads to with Funaki, but as actual match, kind of lackluster. Victor was not impressive as usual, and he controlled most of the match. So I actually went half a star on this one, Jenny.
Yeah, I did a star just because I did like the whole post-match stuff, but I mean, which is not great, but anyway, it, you know, just punchy, like sloppy punchy, like kind of boring, lame. It looks kind of sick when Connor was throwing Funaki around, but that's not really that impressive, so I'm gonna still give it the one, but I just don't really care about any of this.
Well, Jenny, I was moderately more generous than you were, only because, I mean, I gave our opener almost a star, so I can't say this was really worse than that. So I went a star and a quarter on it. But, I mean, yeah, I agreed with everything. And that is encompassing the post-match as well, which, as you put it, is not good, but it's something. you know,
the crowd, oh my God, the crowd was like, fuck, man.
Yeah, they're pretty, they're like, I don't know, this is something that you serve up to people who have, like, maybe never seen wrestling before. I just, like, where you're not familiar with the tropes and the ins and outs of, you know, backstabbing and non-wrestling people getting attacked and stuff like that. But, how is this supposed to play to somebody who's watched wrestling for 10, 20, 100 years like we have? It's just sort of, this is stupid. And something happened with Itami in this match. I don't know if he was like, and it didn't seem like he was just selling. Like he got his bell rung or injured his foot or something, because his timing was all fucked up at the end. I mean, he was tripping and just slipping and sliding all over the ring. And I don't know what that was about. It was like he was almost unsure of himself hitting the ropes. And that's why I think, like, maybe his equilibrium was messed up.
All right. Well,
maybe he's thrown off from his mentor getting demolished.
I mean, he ate shit into the turnbuckle at one point season. And I backed it up to see, like, did something happen there? And I was like, I couldn't tell. So
Connor destroys him when he comes in the ring too. So
yeah.
Connor comes in and jumps him, and they so they wrap Itami in the ropes and kind of stomp him while they, and then they turn on Funaki and kind of give him the eliminator, in, right in front of Itami. And so, like Tim said, he looks very upset. They call in commentary when they do the eliminator. I forget who screams this. Go, his tie is all over the place, which is a very weird line. But yes, it gets beat up. I was thinking the whole time. I was like, I feel like even after they were kind of done with the beatdown, they just left him the ropes. I was like, ref, can you let him out the ropes?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, help this man.
Yeah.
The rope spot was not bad, but
right. But again, it's sort of, you have to have not watched wrestling ever to, I think, respond to any of this.
Or, like, it all has to be more over. Like, all the people involved.
Yeah.
Like, if it's going to be this kind of tropey, it's fine. But, they really haven't done a whole lot to build this relationship between him and Funaki to make us feel like he's, you know, like, Funaki's his great mentor. It'd have to be built up than just, hey, look, Funaki's his mentor. Like, we'd have to see them together or something. I did kind of laugh because the whole time there, so Funaki's like in a suit or whatever during this, and he just has his little like pot belly popping out of the bottom while they're beating him up. And so he does the full stretcher job, and Rich Brennan does like the most intense like hush tones. As we see Funaki is being he's loaded onto the stretcher, and we pray for Funaki that he makes it through this terrible beating. And it's the whole time he's like has a little pot belly popping out the bottom, which is gonna pop me.
You know, thoughts and prayers for Funaki, but it's sort of like how badly can we jaded like, fans feel for this middle-aged commentator who's getting destroyed, you know, at the end of this match here, who we never see. It's like, and I'm failing still to understand why Hideo Itami, singles wrestler Hideo Itami, has debuted and is still actively feuding with a tag team.
Tag team, yeah, smart.
Baffling.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if Funaki survives, maybe they go that direction where he like tags with Funaki. But
yeah,
that would be very strange turn, especially to introduce. Yeah, like you said, a guy that's, you know, they hyped him as like the greatest star of Japan, and he comes in, he's in this weird feud. I don't know, but we'll see more of this saga in a moment, and it will get that much better. But we go to our next match, which will be the Vaudevillains versus Enzo and Cass. Renee calls the villains gentlemen, which is kind of funny given their name as villains. Enzo and Cass come out. They troll the Vaudevillains. Like, they had some pretty funny lines here, just kind of doing their shtick that they normally do. Renee makes a comment that Enzo got his shoes through a lottery, that the shoes are so sought after that he had to enter a lottery. So we get the Renee trivia is hitting hot and heavy. Enzo takes a beating, and then Cass comes in and swings the tide. This is typical with Enzo and Cass, but then the villains turn around. They isolate Cass and then hit their finishing sequence with the like, kind of rolling fireman carry and the senton for the win, and they pin Enzo. So pretty standard tag match stuff here. I thought the Vaudevillains should go over because Enzo and Cass are not really – I feel like they're still building them up as characters. I feel like there's – like, I feel like the Vaudevillains are the ones that should be getting pushed maybe a little quicker than them. But I want to start in half. I thought it was a decent little tag match, Tim.
Yeah, I thought it was quite decent, too. And they swerved me, in fact, because I thought this was going to finish real early. After Cass hit that big boot, he's put away a lot of guys, a lot of teams with that. And I figured that was just going to be it. This would be just kind of a throwaway, you know, exhibition-y tag team match. But turned into a false finish. Vaudevillain saved it, came back, and managed to eke out the win here and looked pretty impressive in doing so. I went a whole 2 stars on this, and I thought it was solid enough.
I'm right there with you, Timothy. 2 stars for me. The crowd is negative 100 million stars. Like, y'all can't get into this match. This is a good match. Mm. And Aiden looks amazing. Like, he everything he does is sharp and, like, you know, like, impactful. The height on a leg drop. I mean, like, everything that he does, really good, like, really good. And even Enzo and Cass, I thought, put up a little fight. And I enjoyed this quite a bit. I gave it 2 stars, too.
Yep, makes sense to me. Yeah, because I feel like Enzo and Cass, a lot of their stuff is still just about their kind of antics and the character stuff. Like, I don't think it really hurts them to take a loss right now.
Nah,
and as we're going to see, they seem to be kind of heating up the Vaudevillains to maybe make a bit of a leap and do something. But anyway, we head to the back where we see Sammy getting interviewed, where he's asked about Titus O'Neil, who he's going to face later on tonight or very soon. I forget. Anyway, he says Titus looks like a monster, but he's stuck in a feud fighting against a bunny. So this is some good, like, savage Sammy. Pretty much called Titus a loser, like that they're putting him all over as the monster. And then he's pretty much downplaying that. But he says he feels good about his chances against Titus. So kind of a standard Sammy promo here, maybe a little more added aggression than normal, less passive aggressive and more straight aggressive.
He's being real sly about it, but he's getting his shots in.
A little more petulant than we're used to from Sammy, but I'm kind of okay with it because honestly, yeah, everything he says is true.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're kind of trying to build maybe his frustration too, that he needs to kind of. Seems to be a running theme, as we're going to see, about maybe not being as nice, which will be something that will come into play with our next match, or at least the in the women's division. So this will be Becky versus Sasha. So we continue to get these kind of insane matchups on paper, considering where all these people would go, all these women would go later in their careers, that every single episode of NXT, we're getting some variation of Becky, Sasha, Becky, Charlotte, something like that. But anyway, Albert says that, now I wanted to ask you all this because I've never heard this term before. He says that Becky's gear looks like she's wearing a drape sponge.
I don't know what the shit that is.
What the fuck is a drape sponge? I was like, what is that?
Drape sponge.
I think he just put some fucking words together.
Does he mean like curtains? Like sponge?
Yeah, like, well, then Renee made the reference to like Carol Burnett wearing, which, who in the world is going to, their audience is really going to get a fucking Carol Burnett show reference. But anyway, wearing the drapes from that skit, you know, from her show in the fucking 70s. So, yeah, I mean, I guess that's what he was talking about. Curtains, drapes. To me, it looked like the bed skirt on a hotel room bed.
Yeah.
Which I think I've made that comparison before. But, yeah, she just kind of cut that up and wore it.
Gotcha. I didn't look it up because I wanted to
There's
see
nothing. It. There's nothing.
Drape. I mean, did he say, do we know that
maybe
he said
sponge? Maybe misheard sponge.
Yeah.
Maybe, here. But it was so specific. I don't know. Like, I was.
I got the captions on. I'm watching it. Let me see if I can find it.
Yeah. But anyway, Sasha's song, she already has her song, and I have to say her song is a banger. I enjoy Sasha's song. She still kind of has the thrashing offense going a little bit here as we start off. We get some cringy commentary about them talking about women being jealous, and I think I forget who it is. I think it's Renee that actually says, what woman isn't jealous? Which is, you know,
unfortunate Renee.
Women's commentary. But anyway. But
he
anyway,
does say a drape sponge anyway.
The mystery.
Like she's
a drape sponge.
Yeah, like she's soaking up the drapes in the room or so. Like she's absorbing the drapes.
That,
like
that
they
sense.
Shouldn't. His commentary team should have followed up and
been
like, what
this
the hell
commentary should have been sent to space and left there.
Yeah, they're struggling without Regal and. I honestly feel like Rich Brennan, they only have him because he kind of looks like Michael Cole. Like, I feel like this is the reason he is employed. It's because he kind of looks like him. But anyway, Sasha goes to like a bow and arrow submission until Becky fires up. I did find Becky was screaming a lot, like a little bit too much. Like everything was just screaming. But anyway, Sasha comes back, hits a clothesline, and then does her sequence with the backstabber to the bank statement, which I really like. But I thought this was kind of just a back and forth, pretty typical match. I went 2 stars on it. Thought it was solid. I do like, even though I think her offense still like is not that great, I do like the backstabber to bank statement combo to win. And I thought Becky looked good. She had a lot of energy, a lot of screaming, but it was a fine match.
A lot of energy and a lot of moves with a Z. I just felt like she kept doing things. Like, Sasha doesn't have that much of a moveset. Becky showed her up for sure in this match. That super uppercut into the clotheslines, that shit was badass. And Becky's arms are jacked as shit. Like that, Becky's arms are like goals. And I really liked the little hair flip in the face that she did to start the match. It looked more rock star than like BFF style. You know, like more badass. So I was super got into this match and I gave it 2.5 stars.
I'm not far off from either of y'all, splitting difference with 2.25. And yeah, Jenny, as much as I love Sasha and pretty much always have, meanwhile, never being much of a Becky fan, I would have to concede that Becky wrestled circles around Sasha in this match.
For sure.
It sort of pained me to see that, but I can't deny it. But I mean, it wasn't bad for what it was. Like Sasha didn't look lost or anything. It's just that you could tell that Becky was very much a cut above her.
Yeah.
And for Sasha to come back, all she really gets in as far as her offense, meaningful offense, is just that finishing sequence, which I do always enjoy seeing that backstabber into bank statement. I think it looks really sick, and she nailed it here. So, yeah, I was very entertained by this and thought it was quite the impressive showing for, you know, an early Becky NXT match. You can tell she's really got a lot of seasoning. And these other competitors, anybody she works with, are probably going to stand to learn a lot from her in the ring.
For sure. Yep.
Yeah, I agree. She definitely looked better than Sasha. Sasha just had, Jenny put it, she just doesn't have any moves. There's no moves except for the finishing sequence.
The finisher, yeah.
And like
in her surfboard, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because all of her strikes, like, she didn't really throw punches or anything. It's all these, like, flailing hands and the thrashing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thrashing based offense.
Yes. All right. So we'll go to our main event, which is going to be Titus versus Sammy, which we had Titus come in our last episode, and kind of his plan, his motivation here is to take over NXT so he can call it NXT Titus, apparently. As soon as the match starts, the crowd hits him with a Darren's Better chant, which I was like, damn, immediately they're just burying him.
He's
I wondered what they were chanting. So
yeah, I didn't hear it either.
Yeah, I think it was Darren's Better. Darren's Better. God. Of course, his tag team partner, but lots of slow Titus offense to start as Sammy like works underneath for a good majority of the match. I thought Titus had a few good strikes, but a lot of his offense is real kind of bland to me in this match. At one point, I think he had Sammy in the corner and he did nothing. Like, he just had him in the corner, the ref's counting five, and he wasn't doing anything. He just had him in the corner. Like, he did literally nothing. We go to commercial, which is unfortunately shows that every main event has to have a break. It's something that always bothers me in any shows to watch. We come back and Titus has the bear hug, which, again, not the most convincing bear hug, kind of a lazy bear hug. But Sammy has gotten really no offense at this point. He's just getting worked over. But they're pushing on commentary that Sammy is never going to give up. Titus then goes to the bear hug again, but this time it's like a reverse bear hug, I guess. Sammy finally pulls the ropes down as Titus is charging at him to drop him, and does his dive that he always does, that nice senton dive. And then Titus comes back in, he hits a crossbody. Sammy goes for a sleeper, and then Titus tosses him, getting a bit more interesting as we get to the later part of the match, as Sammy's like offense is picking it up as opposed to the very boring early part where Titus is doing nothing. But Titus is counting everything he's doing, and then finally hits Sammy with the powerbomb and actually wins, which was, I guess, surprising in the moment. I guess as I see where they're going with this, it sort of made sense, I guess, with the story they're trying to tell with Sammy, but a little bit surprising. I wasn't sure the point otherwise as to why you'd have Titus win. I don't know. I feel like Sammy helped us a lot with his selling and did what he could, and yes. I like the fire and when he picked it back up. But, man, I feel like throughout this entire match, Titus just comes off like a complete stiff, and it's like only so much Sammy could do with him. I still went 2.5 on it because I still think it was pretty good, but it could have been so much better if Titus just had more of an arsenal to work with in here. It can make things more interesting when he's dominating.
Okay, well, here's where we part company, I guess. I have written down, quote, "This match was long and slow and stupid and sucked shit."
I'm not far off from you. I felt like I was trying to grasp at straws, but I might be closer to you in all honesty.
So, I mean, even having said that, I still gave it 1.75 stars. So it's like, you know, you figure 2 stars is like an average match. This is like a just below average match that, you know, none, all the same, I just thought really kind of sucked for a main event, even a TV main event. I don't know why it got so much time. Maybe they wanted to give Titus somewhat of a showcase to see what he was capable of. And as we saw, it was not very much. So, and that's what bothers me a bit with this approach of bringing in main roster guys. You know, it could be a way to, you know, really fulfill like the best of both worlds, where they get something out of it by, you know, just having something to do, getting some exposure that they weren't otherwise getting, and giving NXT the rub, such as they are able to the extent that they were able to. But here it just, it ain't working. Like, if you're going to bring in a main roster guy, at least have them be somewhat good in ring. And, wow, Titus just isn't. I mean, I like him. I like that he has that very imposing look, a very strong, like, prototypical pro wrestler look, but he just does not have interesting offense in a way that even the Ascension would look at and go, come on, man, bury it up. And yeah, that I don't know, that finishing stretch is about all this match had going for it when Sammy starts to fire off, but gets knocked back down. So, and I hate seeing him lose, of course. I mean, yeah, I get it. Mm-hmm. But enough with these. If they're going to be from the main roster coming down here, can they please not be such scrubs?
But if they weren't scrubs, then they wouldn't be sent down to NXT.
Well, right? The thing is, like, I wouldn't call, well, Tyson Kidd, like, wasn't a scrub in ring. Like, he could string a match together. You know what I mean? Like, though we found his character in NXT very grating and, like, annoying after a while, you could still get a decent match out of him. Gosh, who else have we seen from the main roster? Was it Brodus? Yes. For that little cup of coffee he had with Neville? I thought that was fine. That was just fine. You know, and they could have done the same with Titus here, but he's just not really game for it. He's just, I don't think he can work up to the level of a Brodus Clay. Bless his heart.
Below the Brodus line.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, I agree.
Well below.
I had written down like an inappropriate question and I was like, I probably shouldn't ask that. But then after we've talked all this shit about Titus, I've decided I'm going to ask, how big do you think his dick is? Because it looks very large. In those trunks.
Maybe that's why he's so lumbering.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. I'm thinking his balance.
It fucks with his center of gravity.
Yeah. I'm saying it might be a possibility.
He's a large man.
Very large. And I thought that Sammy made him look a lot better than he is, which is great on Sammy. If you can overlook just like lumbering falls into the ropes and like, you know, I don't know. The bear hug. Now, see, I was sort of on board with the bear hug because they didn't just stand there. He was really like, you know, squishing him and like wrenching him around. Like, I thought he did more movement from his waist holding Sammy and flinging him around than the rest of his whole body in, like, the rest of the match. So, that crazy dive on the ramp was awesome. It hit him just right, and he went down like a freaking tree. Two and a half. I didn't hate it because I thought Sammy worked his ass off to just fucking lose again, but that's okay. I don't know. I agree with all your points about Titus, and congratulations on his giant cock.
We think. There you
go. Probably.
But, not trying to do a pun here, but I feel like he was a bit exposed in this match. Like, like Tim said, I feel like it exposed, because if you were just watch like regular WWE, like Titus is probably never in the ring in any situation for more than like 90 seconds. And so you could maybe give them the benefit of doubt and think guys like this, like, oh, they're probably pretty good, because you just assume everybody in WWE is up to like a certain level. But then he gets here and you're like, oh, well, no wonder they never let him really like do much, because if he gets more than 3 minutes, he looks like shit. So it kind of justifies why some of these guys in the main roster don't really, get pushed more, despite like Tim said, he looks fantastic, but you just feel like he can't move. I guess it's a giant penis, but whatever. I mean, it just looks like he can't bend his back. It seems to be the problem. He looks like he's like an action figure where the
it's got those Lex Luger issues where things don't really straighten or bend or The mobility is not really there. So I mean, I guess other than the match that other than the fact that Titus sucks shit, the match was fine, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, and I don't blame you, Tim. I feel like maybe I was trying to be more positive, but I totally get your points. But anyway, he draped Sammy on the apron to try and, you know, he looks like he's going to do some devastating maneuver, which I doubt he could do anything off the top rope. But
say, what are we about to see?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, come on, Neville, come save him, because I don't know what I'm going to do. He's like, draped him on the apron. He went up to the top rope and was like, oh, I got to see this. And then Neville comes and saves him. He saved Titus more than he saved Sammy.
Yeah, he did.
Titus would have been stuck up there like a cat in a tree. Wouldn't know what the fuck to do.
I'm kind of want to see him try to come down on him.
He just fucking falls.
Axe handle or a fucking leg drop or some shit.
He's just like a 450 on the apron. He's like, I've been playing you the whole time. His giant dick's flapping in the wind. Anyway,
he rips his tights off and does like a shooting star.
Yeah.
All right. That kind of wraps up the episode. So it does show that, because we've had kind of this frenemies thing going on with Sammy and Neville. And so it kind of shows the friend portion of it, I guess, because Neville comes to save him. But that wraps up our episode. I thought this was like a very blah episode. We had a few things that were pretty good, but a lot of these, especially when the main event gets a lot of time, these shows are so contingent on the main event, which I thought this one was disappointing at best. And we didn't get a ton of other stuff that was too exciting or developed too much. So I thought this was kind of more of a down episode. It felt very skippable, I guess, is what I would say. So I went 4 out of 10 on it.
I think I'll be a little bit more down, since I was, you know, more down on the main event, and proportionately that's most of our show, I feel like. I mean, I'd probably be more forgiving of that main event if it hadn't been as long as it was. So, you gave it a 4. I'll just, give it the gentleman's 3.5, I suppose.
Well, I was a little bit more generous. I enjoyed, Enzo and Cass stuff, and Bob Villain stuff, and Becky and Sasha, and, a little bit more of the main event than you got. So I'm going to go 4.5 out of 10.
Okay.
All right. We'll see how they follow up. As Rich Brennan would say, PTV NXT rolls on, as we'll go to the October 16, 2014 episode of NXT. And we open up in a similar fashion to what we did in the first episode, with different participants, but sort of the same vibe, as Baron Corbin comes out to face Elias Sampson. So we're seeing Elias here in his early stages. But this was possibly shorter than the Mojo match, because Baron Corbin comes in, he hits the End of Days, and that's it. These are some squash matches where people are literally hitting one move. I guess they're not even going to bother trying to showcase much of anything else. They've not really shown that Baron Corbin can do anything else besides End of Days, because that's all he really does. I went 0 on this one. I feel like I'm backing off of my 1-star squash, because I feel like you got to do something more than this. It did look good, though. The End of Days did look good.
It's a dud. It's a dud for me, yo.
A 0.5-star by my definition of what a squash is.
Yeah, I feel you. It's fine.
It exists. It does. Is what that rating signifies.
Are we biased? Do we have a Baron bias? Is that it?
Look, I hate the guy, and I gave it the highest rating, so
true,
no bias.
True. Okay.
I probably hate
I gave it. I gave it to Breeze on the last one. I love Breeze, so. I feel like it's fair.
All right.
You gave it to Breeze.
I gave it to Breeze. I gave Breeze the old Dederuski. Yeah. Gave him the old the Ascension treatment.
No bias detected. Right. Jake buried a guy that he likes. I commended a guy that I hate. So
okay,
that's objective. No, objective professional on this podcast.
We can say anything else in this whole episode, and we've got cover now.
Oh, good. Yeah. Thank God.
Yeah.
All right. Sammy comes out to cut a promo, and he actually comes to the ring, which is kind of a rarity in NXT. They typically keep these things backstage, but he comes out to the ring. Alex calls him a choker on commentary. Alex Riley is on commentary for this one, and he really pushes that Sammy's a choker. A big Ole chant, so he's super over with the crowd. This crowd a lot more alive than we saw in the last episode.
Yes, thank God.
He gets on Mike and says he's sick of losing because he knows he's better than that, and it's time for him to go after the NXT championship. So cue Tyson, Tyson's music, who we thought we might have been done with him, but I guess not yet. He's actually wearing yeah, I actually put that in my notes. Ed,
me too.
Cue Tyson, sigh.
Die. Sigh. Yes. also, Tyson, let's please die.
He's wearing a Sammy's shirt to troll him. He says, "Fact, you'll never be champ." Sammy asks if he got Natty's permission to come out here and say that, which gets some oohs and ahs from the crowd. Sick burn. And he tells him to go cry himself to sleep watching Total Divas, which is sort of a funny line. Tyson continues to hammer him and question if he should even be here in NXT based on all his losses in the big matches. And Sammy says he lives in the now, not in the past, and this is going to be his road to redemption. And he makes a comment about Tyler Breeze having selfies of Natty or something, and then Tyson looks like an idiot because he asked why would Natty have Tyler's number, which I thought was pretty funny. And they set up a match for later, fact. So we will see them in action later on. So we're not done with Tyson yet. But I feel like the main point of this was to set up this, like to finally get across, hopefully, that this is going to be Sammy going for the title and that this is going to be our story, like, which I'm here for. I'm ready for the real Sammy chase to begin. I don't know about y'all.
I mean, like, was the last one like a... like a test, because look, you've been on this road for a little bit, Sami Zayn. Also, y'all led me to believe we were done with Tyson, so y'all are liars, and I'm quitting the show.
I see. Well, I am too, because I feel like I was lied to, and there was a real missed opportunity here. They're talking about how Sami Zayn is a choke artist. Tyson is really right. One to fucking talk. I mean, exactly. where is the dig on Tyson Kidd for, what was it, not 2 weeks ago, he lost his last chance title rematch against Neville in pretty spectacular fashion. A match that he only got at the behest of his wife. So, I mean, I feel like they shouldn't have slept on that. I know that the story is really Sammy's here, and we're putting him on the road to hopefully finally win the big one. We'll have to see. But come on, man. Bury Tyson a little bit more while we're at it. If he's going to be on his way out, then don't let that slide.
It's like all the insults have to be Natty related with Tyson. That's like all they can insult him for.
Well, it's so easy. It's right there.
Yeah.
Also, that shit is hurtful to him, and everybody knows that shit.
Hitting the word hurts. He doesn't care about being called a choker. Exactly. He's like,
I lose all my matches. It's fine. My wife.
You lose all your matches that you only get because your wife is the only person who gives a shit about you.
Fuck yeah.
Loser.
Yeah, so we'll
that's our show. Night.
We'll see if. So we'll see if this will be Tyson's last match. Maybe he has to fight every single person in NXT in a last
chance.
Loser leaves town. All right. We head to a tag match with our tag team champions, the Lucha Dragons, who we enjoyed quite a bit on this pod. And they will be facing the team of Buddy Murphy and Wesley Blake, who are pushed as, I guess, some Australians, which I don't even think Wesley Blake's Australian. I know Buddy Murphy is, but they kind of just pushed it. They're both Australian on commentary. Some pretty solid action. I thought the challengers, you know, you're expecting them to lose, of course, and this is non-title, but I thought they looked okay. Specifically, I liked that spot that they really highlighted a lot too, where I think it was Murphy kind of powered up into that suplex, like he reversed it and kind of almost dragged Sin Cara across the ring and like suplexed him, which I thought was a pretty good spot. But it's a lot of them working over Sin Cara to start, I should say, until he starts to escape with some nice kicks and then hits the hot tag. And Kalisto is an awesome hot tag as usual, hitting all of his awesome Lucha Libre high flying offense that's real crisp and awesome. And he hits his we get a sweet finisher by Sin Cara where he almost does like a I called it a sunset bomb face sitter because it almost looked like he sat on Wesley Blake's face there. But it was a pretty sick move, and it was cool to see them bust out a different finisher than what they typically do. And they continue to impress me. But I thought it was a pretty fun match. Even the what I thought was going to kind of be a jobber team, I even thought they had got a few nice moments to shine. But it was kind of all about the Lucha Dragons. They look great. I went 2.25. Pretty fun.
Forgot whose turn it was, Tim.
We don't do turns, do we? But yeah, so excuse me. Oh god, I got Lucha Dragon breath.
Jenny, I think it's your turn.
I should have just said started talking.
Hell happened. Which is Blake the one who looks like a tarantula?
I feel like Buddy Murphy has more of the beard and kind of
the hair is very tarantula like.
Well, they have
is that Buddy Murphy?
Buddy Murphy has the tarantula hair, like the kind of floppy.
I will never know what one from the other. I'm just going to tell you all that right now.
Same.
I don't care how many matches I see of theirs. It's not going to happen. So, especially when they all have like ranch hand names, and they're all it's a team of all first names. Two guys with four first names, and they all spell ranch hand names. Australian ranch hands is what they are. Who look like tarantulas, at least one of them. That said, I agree with all of Jake's points about the match. I think the Lucha Dragons are settling into a nice little formula now as this face tag team, and you know, with Kalisto getting the hot you wouldn't think the smaller guy is the hot tag specialist here, but it works really well for them. But we do get a pretty original finish, I would agree, with the face sitter, for lack of a better term.
I like that term. What are we talking about?
mixing it up the way they finish their matches. So Sin Cara actually delivers the face sitter, right? So I think it's usually Kalisto who finishes. This doesn't sound right at all. Any of the things that I'm saying. Sounds so.
I say that because it's like when he went down, it just felt like he just landed right on his face.
He went down. So I gave it 2 stars. Jenny, as I get some water.
So did we like kind of gloss over the fact that their team name is Team Thick?
Oh, I forgot about that. They did say that.
So yeah, they did say that, didn't they?
Yeah.
Was that official or
they said it. I mean,
I wonder how. Yeah, that was like the first and I feel like only time I've heard that.
Okay.
I thought it might have been like a Renee doing her just saying stuff thing.
I don't know. There was, you know, some haziness there on their team name. I think it's a very accurate team name, and I think they should keep it. Because, like you said, they all have first names, so fuck all that, and you're Team Thick now.
Mm-hmm.
I actually like this. Like, they're not the usual, like, sort of jerk-offs that usually get fucked around in these tag matches, like Todd Dillinger and Jason Jordan.
Usual jerk-off.
These guys, they were doing this shit. Like, I thought they looked really good. I was impressed with them. And then, the Lucha Dragons are on fire. Like, they're just clicking on everything. Like, the crowd loves them. Like, it's pretty much the only time the crowd wakes up, for the most part. I really like this. It was a fun little match. And I want more of Team Thick, so 2 stars.
Very good. Yeah, I think you accomplish everything you need to in this match thing, because the Lucha Dragons go over, and then the Team Thick was not totally forgettable. So I think that's well done. All right, we go to we get a recap of Breeze destroying Mojo's shoulder from the episode we just watched, and then we see Mojo in the back sitting, apparently getting treatment for his destroyed shoulder. He suddenly tells us that he's going to be out for a while, and he says it's time to regroup and refocus. and he has this giant medical device on his shoulder, and he says he will be back with Rage because I stay hype. So even in the darkest time, he stays hype. Even when he is receiving medical treatment for his destroyed shoulder, and he has lost 45 straight matches, he stays hype. But he is much more sullen, and, you know, this is like a, you know, this is a dark period for Mojo, so we'll have to see if he's going to come back.
Yeah. I will say that I questioned after his humiliating 45-second defeat to Tyler Breeze in the keyless lock. it has to be difficult on some level, or like a blow to your ego, just as a person, as not Mojo Rawley the character, but John Rawley, whatever the fuck his real name is, the person. to have to go out here every single week and lose, like, not just lose your matches, but like to get nothing and be treated like such a piece of dog shit, right? Mm-hmm. At a certain point, you've got to start to feel like, well, I guess I really am a piece of dog shit, right? Like, it's, goodness. It must be difficult not to internalize that as a performer, as a person. Compounded with the fact that your character is, I stay hype, like you're this, you know, this kind of very positive, always energetic, like, it must be hard to muster that sort of character when your booking is what it's been for Mojo for the past, like, 6 months or what feels like 6 months.
Hey, look, this is Mojo's range, okay? He could do hype in a positive way.
Well, yeah, now we're actually seeing, like, maybe this is something he can, you know, he can really channel here. He can channel some of that internal, very, very put upon, you know, I don't know. He can go somewhere with this, maybe.
Okay, we'll see.
Probably not.
Somber hype.
Yeah, somber hype.
I feel like he really elicited some sympathy from Tim, apparently. I feel like you are. Yeah.
No, not really. I was just wondering, you know, as an academic exercise, I was just curious if he was, you know, this must do to a person, you know, what this system must do to a person.
That's cool. He's friends with Gronk. He's
funny. I mean, really. Fine. Getting a sympathy right. For me. I know it works out fine for him, basically, so.
Yeah. I like that. I was like, I feel like you got some sympathy where you're like, whoa, whoa, let's not get it twisted. Whoa,
let's not go that far. Let's not go crazy.
All right. So what our next match is going to be Becky versus Charlotte, or Charlotte, I guess I should say. We start with some nice scrapping on the mat, which is typical of Charlotte's matches as she's been champion. Pretty good stuff. She does the spot where she starts ramming her opponent's head into the mat, which is always cool. Very, like, she's like a shooter, man. Like, it's all about the mat work in these Charlotte matches. She spends a good deal, and it's good stuff. Like, it's like they're not just kind of fucking around the mat doing nothing. Like, it looks all pretty legit. Becky finally gains a little bit of momentum and hits some leg drops. But then, as she usually does, Charlotte survives that, hits a neck breaker, and which puts Becky in the perfect position for the natural selection, which ends her. But, yeah, I thought this was a good match. Charlotte is becoming one of the highlights of NXT for sure. Like, she's starting to have where her matches never get below a certain level because she's in them. And as long as she's not in there with somebody who's a complete, you know, scrub, you're going to get something pretty good. So I went 2.5. I like the mat work. I kind of like Becky's little comeback. And I like the way that they're building Becky, even though she's losing these matches. I feel like she's looking pretty good in them. And she doesn't just look like a forgettable jobber, which is good. But I enjoyed the match. I went 2.5. Jenny?
Yes. Yes. Charlotte looks amazing in black. I love that sweet ass backbreaker she did on Becky, and it was funny because when she did it, she like was like not quite in the right position to like To me, it just looked like she was positioning herself on the hard camera to get that fucking backbreaker on Becky, which is a very, like, Charlotte type thing, I think, that she would be conscious of and do. But like you said, a great showing by Becky. Like, oh boy. But unfortunately, Charlotte has a lot more moves than Sasha, and she can't keep up with this. She it's a good showing, but I mean, it's Charlotte, and she, like you said, like she has a certain level now, and it came so quick. You know, it was like as soon as she got the belt, it was like something snapped, and like she just worked everything out, and like she just is a whole package now. She's amazing. 2.5 stars.
Well, look at us. Really right across the board here. 2.5 stars for me too. And agreed on all points. Charlotte is just such a, it sounds so stupid to say, like just a natural athlete. Like, I don't know how else to put it though. I mean, like even things that don't come off exactly the smoothest in the world. You mentioned that backbreaker Jenny, she still kind of just makes it work. In a way that it sort of adds to the competitive spirit of the match, rather than seeming like, well, here's a spot that got blown in a wrestling match, you know what I mean? Like, and that's got to be a very difficult thing to pull off, you know, for hard camera reasons or whatever. Like, she just makes that stuff work. And, you know, Becky is obviously no slouch here. This is, I think we've seen one earlier match between the two of them in NXT, right when Becky started.
When she was still dancing a jig. And
the green leprechaun
lady. Yeah. But many, many battles to come. And this is, hey, it's a real match TM, you guys, on this NXT TV show. I'm not going to call it a hidden gem, but it's a match that is, you just look at this and compare like pretty much everything else we watch on these shows to it. Like so much of this stuff is so throwaway. And I talk about, you know, Mojo's Perils as an academic exercise, you know, trying to do star ratings for a lot of these matches is an academic exercise, whereas you get something like this and you can really sink your teeth into. So I was pretty impressed here.
Charlotte, she just has the unteachables, like besides the athleticism and, you know, just her character, her personality, she's just a star. Like, that's just how she is.
You're saying you can't teach that.
You can't teach that.
I think they even say that a lot during the, they say a lot of this on commentary at a lot of these matches about different people. Like, I think they say it about Titus at one point earlier. They said something like look at the size on that guy. You can't let him in the performance center.
Right.
So I get it. But yeah, if you would have told me, which I don't even know how prevalent women's amateur wrestling is, but the way she's been in these matches, and if you would have told me like she was an amateur wrestler, like in high school or college or something, I would have probably believed you, because she's really good on the mat. It's awesome.
She has a gymnastics background. So you'd think you would think she'd be maybe more of a high flyer. Which I mean, she has that beautiful moonsault.
Yeah, she can fly.
She can do it, but she's definitely more mat based. Yeah.
But man, and the last thing I'll say is that the women's division, just what a 180 they've come from where we started. Impressive. It's definitely been a nice progression from the stupid shit we were watching when we first started the pod.
Yeah. Glad we got all right there.
So we continue. We get a recap of the passion of Funaki, of him getting his ass beat as Tommy is stuck at the ropes. And then we head to the Ascension, who are backstage, and they brag about their work. And then we get to the point where I guess they're trying to come up with some motivation for this feud between them and Tommy. And so they start pushing this thing like that he doesn't belong in NXT, which is like the thinnest of thin motivations as to why they give a shit about Tommy. It's just... Yeah. I don't know. Like you said earlier, Jenny, the feud is just lame. It's just a dumb feud. Why are we doing this? It needs to just end and move on to something else.
Please.
This is like the dumb shit excuse you try to think of on the fly when you haven't done the work.
Like, you're just,
like the,
all the
yeah,
podcasts.
Like they're the gate.
No, we're good.
They're like
that.
The gatekeepers of NXT. Like, who do you think you are, Tommy? Like,
yeah, really.
Why don't they go after Titus, whose like sole purpose is to take over NXT, apparently, and name it after himself? They don't care about him.
Who held up the show 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
I still don't get it. I guess this would have been fine for you bring Itami in, like you need something for him to do to like get over on like an established NXT act for a week or two. This thing with the Ascension might have been fine, but this is like an active feud and it just, it doesn't make any sense. Unless they knew where things were going to land with Itami as far as, finding a tag team partner. But I don't know. That just seems very, like, I do remember what ultimately happens, but it would seem like way too forward thinking on their part to be booking towards that right now. So I don't want to give them that.
All right. Well, we head to, I guess, a much hotter feud, which is Enzo and Cass and the Legionnaires. So they're set for a tag team match, which of all their matches they have, I'm trying to think if they've ever had a straight tag match with all four of them.
I don't think they have.
It's been about a bunch of singles. But we won't really get it anyway, because as soon as the match starts, this is a point where I was thinking Jenny's going to appreciate this with her new Jersey Shore love. But anyway, as soon as the match kind of starts, I don't even remember exactly what happened, but Sylvester Four like knocks off Marcus Louis' wig and he just goes insane on him and like just attacks him. So he never actually gets just completely goes like snaps Ken Shamrock style.
It goes after great.
So the Legionnaires explode here. The big breakup we've all been waiting for. So I actually don't really get a match here. We just get the Legionnaires. I guess it's tried to push to us as if it's something that matters, but you know, who cares?
Yeah, I mean, I went ahead and wrote down dud, but really 5 stars because it's so much better. It's so much better than an actual match would have been. You know, you have to reward them for making the right decision here. It's so the perfect call, you know, not to do a match, but to have this bullshit instead. I applaud them for it.
5 stars.
5 stars dead.
5 star dead. All right. We then head to Enzo and Cass, who then, I guess, since they've already got the floor, they introduce an opponent for Carmella, because it's going to be her in-ring debut, and she's going to be facing who they dub Bluey, which is a woman in blue pants, which I think that's what she ends up being known as in her what appearances she does have in NXT. I don't think she ever gets like a real name. They just call her blue pants.
Yeah.
So it's going to be Mella versus Blue Pants. In the typical style that we've seen on these, it's a squash. It's the squashiest squash that ever squashed, because Mella just taps her in like, I don't know, 20 seconds with a head scissors. They look pretty good. But yeah, these one move squashes just getting straight to the point. So I kind of went, I don't know, I feel like I keep going dud on these just because I just feel like it's not even really anything.
I like
you them. Say it's not anything. I say it exists. It's a half a star.
So I like Carmella. I like this whole thing that they're done with the Jersey Triad, and I think it's charming and she looks good. So it's her debut. I gave her a star. What the fuck?
How about it?
And I like Bluey. And they called her Kitty Pride.
They did at one point.
Okay.
She's sort of dressed like an X-Man.
Like an X-Man, for sure.
So, I mean, this is a half-star, five-star match, really. Because it's a two big debuts in Blue Pants and Mella. Yeah. Exactly. Impressive. Yeah. I love her. I love that submission too. I always have.
Yeah, it looks good.
Yeah, it looked really good. I agree. All right, so we go backstage. We have Becky.
Becca.
Becky. Sorry, I was in the I guess maybe it was in the Jersey Shore mindset. Anyway, Becky tells Sasha that she's disgusting for what she did. Sasha snipes back at her and says that you have to be willing to do whatever it takes, and questions if Becky is willing to do the same. And so they do that thing they always do where, like, they zoom in on the last person. So, of course, Sasha walks away, and they zoom in on Becky, and she just, like, stares off for, like, 5 seconds. I don't know why they make them do that. And it always,
it's so awkward.
Like, she's just staring, and she's, like, trying to figure out what face she wants to make here. And it's like, just don't make her do that. Like, the point's, like, why do that?
Yeah,
it's not helping anything.
Yeah. It looks like a cheesy soap opera.
What if one of them just, like, you have to figure there's, like, outtakes where they just totally corpsed and, like, lost it because they did the zoom in too long or something. Yeah. Like that
gift. WCW sometimes those would make the final cut, so
yes,
right.
Anyway, we go to an interview with Neville, and this is just a quick interview, him kind of addressing Sammy and saying that Sammy's not going to be able to get his title, so just kind of continuing to build their kind of conflict / friendship, whatever they have going on. And then we get a commercial for the WWE 2K15 soundtrack, which I only mentioned because they push this idea that John Cena's doing a song with Wiz Khalifa, which Wiz Khalifa seems very 2014 at this point. Like, I feel like I kind of forgot about him a bit. I'm not sure if he's still around much.
I sure did.
He was big back then.
Yeah.
So, with that, if there's no further thoughts on the Wiz and John Cena collab, we'll head to our main event, which is going to be Sammy versus Tyson in Tyson's second farewell match. Alex Riley says that Tyson has a WrestleMania moment. I just, like, cringe. Like, why is, like, not that he's won championships or anything or done it. He's like, hey, he has a WrestleMania moment, right?
So he's referring to the run-in in the Vince Brett match, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, what else has he done at WrestleMania?
Just the idea of a WrestleMania moment being like on your trophy cases.
Well, and he's also emphasizing his WrestleMania moment, is his, semi association with what is largely regarded to be one of the all-time worst matches in WrestleMania history.
Yeah.
There's your moment. Worst match.
There you go. But back to the match. We start off with kind of a stalemate. I do like stalemate as a term.
I like the snail down between them.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Sammy's feeling himself.
This is going to be a thing
now. He does. I think Titus O'Neil. That's the snail mate.
Yeah.
He's lumbering around with this giant dong. Anyway, Sammy's really feeling himself as he, you think he's going to kind of screw up the dive, but he kind of backs off of it and flips back into the ring. So starting to see, I feel like, a little bit of confidence building in Sammy subtly, I think. But Tyson gets his a kick on the apron, and that allows him to get the momentum. He goes to a headlock. Sammy fires back up, hits his crossbody. He hits the Blue Thunderbomb, which at this point, I feel like the Blue Thunderbomb is a guaranteed, like, 2 3/4 count move. Like, yeah. It's never going to beat anybody, but it's always... you're supposed to think it's going to beat him, but it never will. Mm-hmm. We get a sick snap neck breaker by Tyson. I thought it looked really nasty. I thought that was pretty good. We get a nice sequence where he flips Sammy into the sharpshooter. I thought that was pretty good. And it's really picking up towards the ending here. Tyson slams his ass on the apron, trying to do the apron leg drop. Sammy comes back, hits the exploder. And I thought this was kind of a subtle thing, but we've seen so many times, like, Sammy go for the Huluva kick and, like, it ends up fucking up or the person moves. So it's kind of cool when he actually hits it. And I don't know if I'm just trying to read into the story they're trying to tell and look for little things that are showing Sammy's, like, getting better or whatever. But he actually hits the Huluva kick and wins, which I thought was a nice touch because he misses a lot. But anyway, I thought the beginning was maybe a bit meandering. Like, they kind of started off a little slow, but I thought it really picked up in the end and heated up. And I enjoyed it a good deal once it kind of got going. So I went 3 stars on it, Tim.
Yeah, in some ways, it feels like kind of an exchange of moves with a Z. But, I mean, I'm kind of a sucker for that, and I love Sammy. Tyson, as I've said, is solid enough in ring, even if we're very much over and done with his character. But I like the way that Sammy wrestles this match as someone who is equally done with this guy. Mm. And he's just, he kind of has that swagger and that attitude to him where he's like, there's no fucking way I'm letting this guy beat me. It's just like, you could see it coming through. And I kind of like seeing that from Sammy as a change of pace. Everything looks, you know, super crisp. Tyson, if nothing else, he's got a nice sharpshooter. You know how I feel about a good sharpshooter. So I was impressed with that, but largely just happy to see Sammy get the very definitive win here. Looked great, that Huluva kick. It's not my favorite move in the world. I kind of think he should finish with that Blue Thunder Bomb. Just is a more visually impressive and impactful move, but it is what it is. I mean, that kick, for better or worse, is his finisher. And yeah, to your point, Jake, a lot of times, even when he does kick it, when he does hit it, why are we fucking up tonight left and right? It's like somehow or another he slips on a banana peel and he, you know, he can't put somebody away with it. But here, just very decisive. So I was pretty pleased with this. Hopefully, it is the last we see of Tyson. But I guess we can't really bet on these things, can we? So I went 3 stars myself.
All right. I mean, for the most part, it just felt pretty standard, except for Sammy's sass. I mean, he threw Tyson's jacket in his face. I liked that. Like you said, he's wrestling with a lot more confidence. But, like, yeah, I don't know. They're kind of the same wrestler, you know what I mean? Which is, I guess, good and bad. But... like, Tyson tries to run away at some point, and, like, I don't know. It kind of got lost there for me. Agreed about the Thunderbomb. Definitely should be the finisher, but I'll take that kick when he can get it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little bit lower, 2.75.
Tyson
not
tax.
Bad.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, but that wraps up the episode. It was nice to see Sammy.
Can we be done with Tyson now? Is this his last?
Sorry, I'm not saying
look,
a word.
I feel like we let you down last time, so I can't make any promises.
I can't believe anything you guys say.
You really can't.
Now, I can't tell you at some point he's going to get a devastating injury. So
yeah, so you'll have a career-ending injury. How about that?
Oh yeah, that's right. Okay, I'll look forward to that.
We won't see it. It's a dark mat or a house.
Well, fuck. Yeah. All right.
But it's one less.
It's not good enough that it ends his career.
Jenny, it's one less Tyson match. You have to.
That's true. The only one I want to see, the last one.
The career ending is not enough. She needs footage.
Yeah, sorry.
Just about the NFT of Tyson's career ending. But anyway, our overall show ratings, I thought this was a really good episode. Pretty solid. Good main event. I enjoyed the Charlotte and Becky stuff. Cool debut by Mella. I don't know. It was pretty consistent. I liked the promo thing at the beginning with Sammy and Tyson was okay. So I went 6 out of 10. I thought this was a pretty good episode.
Look, on an hour or a little over 50-minute wrestling show, to get a 3-star match and a 2.5-star match in there, yeah, I mean, you can't be working with less than, I feel like, 6. Yep. Right there.
Look there. Clean sweep. 6 for me, too.
Cool.
Very good. So we bounce back from that kind of ho-hum one that we had a minute ago.
Yeah, let's see if we can keep it up.
Yeah. If you want to hear about some people who can keep it up, you can check out the all the great things that have in the Place to Be Wrestling Network and the Quad of Pods. Check out the PTB Wrestling Network store and show off your favorite podcast logo on great merchandise like t-shirts, hoodies, and more. Just go to tpublic.com and type PTBW in the search. Scott, Nate, and Steve return with the newest main event as they preview a big weekend in wrestling with Impact Slammiversary and WWE Money in the Bank, which has passed by the time you're listening to this, but you can still go and listen to their recap. The newest Highway to the Impact Zone has Logan and the gang, I'm one of the gang, recapping the February 18th and February 25th, 2004 episodes of Impact. They're not great, I'll tell you that. Ben Locke's chicken salad is saucy with shoot comments as he and his guests go back to Bash at the Beach 2000. Saucy with shoot comments.
Well, Rooney and Cook, that's an infamous show with saucy and shoot comments, so it's appropriate.
Gritty and Cook are back with Extreme Resurrection as they can, you know, trek through 2006 WWE CW on the newest episode of The Mothership, the place to be podcast number 581. Scott and JT are with John D'Amato as they head to Indianapolis for WrestleMania 8. Please rate and review and subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music. Just search Place to Be Wrestling Network. Of course, check out the Quad of Pods. The PTB Pop Experience is all about pop culture with the best in TV, movies, comics, trivia shows, and so much more. I know, Tim, you've been on, you guys have been on have been recapping Low Key, which is
we have been recapping Low Key. You might call him the keyless lock, you know, depending on your point of view. But yeah, that's on Pop Goes to the Couch on the Place Be Nation Pop Experience. So we had weekly recaps of Loki, tried to, you know, the Disney Plus drop schedule moving from Fridays to Wednesdays has really fucked us up, but we're trying to stay as on the ball as possible with getting these reviews out, you know, before too much time passes. So I think we're all a little bit grateful here to have a break now that that show is wrapped. We did our most recent recap of that finale of Loki, so episode 6. I thought we did a real nice job on that pod. So some it kind of goes all over the place, much like the episode itself, but by necessity, I think. So, you know, we'll take a break from Marvel stuff, but Pop Goes to the Couch will continue to be a going concern on the Place Be Nation Pop Experience. Just depending on what's out there and of interest to folks, there will be some coverage, I am sure.
Yeah, it's cool you guys are covering things that are happening in the present time, as so much of what we do is watching shit from multiple years ago. So it's cool that you guys are doing something that's kind of more current. Our very own Jennifer Smith is always in the Jenny position with her unique takes on pop culture and life. Her feed is loaded with great shows ranging from movies, books, Marvel, and more. Join JT Rosera, Aaron George, and Chad Campbell for great shows on wrestling, comics, and more with the North South Connection feed. Check out the histories of WWE, TNA, and other great wrestling topics and takes. And join our rejuvenated Place to Be discussion group on Facebook. Go to Facebook, look up Place to Be, and request an invite. Discussions and fun with wrestling, movies, tournaments, and all forms of pop culture. And our 2021 stretch project is determining the greatest NWA WCW wrestler of all time. Go to Facebook.com/GWCW and join the group to discuss. And as always, be sure to check out the website, PlaceToBeNation.com, every day, where they have new voices and fresh takes on the topics of wrestling, sports, and pop culture. Good.
Good.
All right. So with that, we will roll on into our last episode of NXT for this illustrious podcast episode, which will be the October 23rd, 2014 episode of NXT. And we are right out of the gate with, I'm trying to remember, what did Jenny call them earlier? Ty Dillinger and Jason Jordan.
The jerk-offs.
So we will open up with the Ascension versus the jerk-offs, and I think we all know where this match is headed.
Right up our assholes.
The Ascension do their typical shoulder blocks and whatever shit they always do, and they hit the Fall of Man, whatever, half a star.
Wait.
Over it.
Look. I love that recap.
Over it.
Whatever.
My note said, didn't watch, LOL.
Oh, you missed a shocking upset as the jerk-offs beat the Ascension in a 25-minute clinic.
All right, well, what can I add to that? I think I was a little bit more generous. I gave it 3/4 of
No, you did not!
I did. I didn't think it was an absolute squash. I mean, it kind of was, but it was a little bit. There's a little bit more. Marginally.
I wouldn't know. I think I disassociated.
You went into a fugue state. Yes.
Yeah. She couldn't deal with the ascension in her most hated Jason Jordan in the same match. It's just too much to handle.
Just mortal.
I mean, I didn't watch that for y'all, but I did the rest of the shit for y'all.
Yeah. Wow. Luck not sure how much. I feel
about that, but you know.
Anyway, all right, so this post-match segment, this is where you really start to question what this is doing to establish Hideo Itami, because he comes in, he attacks the Ascension, which immediately does not work out for him because it's 2-on-1. They jump him and just beat his ass. Alex Riley is on commentary calling him an idiot, calling him stupid for jumping in the ring to do this. And yeah, and it ends. Nobody comes to help him. I guess Funaki is still incapacitated. Yeah, no one else comes to help him. He never makes a comeback, so he just gets his ass beat and laid out in the ring. Not sure what this is going to do to establish him as this, you know, amazing Japanese superstar that's made to NXT, getting his ass beat and looking like an idiot, as we call him an idiot.
Yeah, he looks stupid. Yeah. He's called stupid, and he is stupid. Funaki, I was really upset. I wanted an update on the I wanted updates throughout the night on the condition of Funaki, to tell you the truth. And it just never happened on any of these shows. You know, we had 3 episodes then, and they just deprived us of that. So what a bunch of bullshit.
He suffered a dislocated tie.
Yeah.
Grave situation.
And shoe. Yeah.
Jen, any thoughts on Tommy being beat up by the Ascension?
Are
you boycotting all Ascension-related material?
The only other note I made was Tommy got his shit pushed in again.
Yeah, not the best build to him. No. Anyway, all right, we now go to our next match, which we have our perennial favorite, CJ Parker, who is going to be facing off against Tyler Breeze. Tyler Breeze calls, so as typical with this, they look at CJ Parker's sign, which says something like pretty benign, like, you know, one man, one cause, one plan or something. And then Albert calls him an egomaniac, you know, because he cares about the environment like an egomaniac cares about global warming, you know, as, you know, we've had, you know, insane heat record waves, high, melting the West Coast. It's rained for like 45 straight days where I live.
6 fucking hurricanes a week in the summer.
Yeah. Fucking egomaniac. But anyway, he actually gets more offense against against Breeze than Mojo did. He gets a few moves in, but then of course, we then see, so I called him, it was like Mojo. Now he doesn't have any, he's dressed normally, but he is very downtrodden, of course. It was very Sting-esque. He was like a Crow Sting version of Mojo. As he's just standing very seriously at the top of the ramp, watching the match with no expression on his face. And but anyway, Breeze comes back, he hits the beauty shot and beats CJ Parker, even as Mojo is watching. And then he walks back up the ramp and mocks Mojo to his face. So I would have star in the match. It was, you know, not much.
I like this a little bit better than you. Now I don't like that CJ Parker got as much offense on Tyler as he did, but just for the sake of this being more of a, you know, competitive match, not that it is, but it's more than, you know, yet another squash, right? So I guess I appreciated that aspect of it. I also liked the finish, which saw Tyler duck that crescent kick from CJ and then nail the beauty shot, which, you know, we've been sort of critical of as a finisher, but I thought it worked pretty well in that sequence, that counter that he had, and then to pick up the win. So, I mean, I went star and a half on it. Maybe give it the hotness premium again because Tyler's my boyfriend. But It's still worth, I think, a star and a quarter, unbiased, you know.
Hey, I thought we weren't doing bias. We're all fair.
Oh, that's right. We have too much cover. Yeah.
No boyfriend bias. Yeah, then we just blew it for Tyler Breeze.
Blew all of our credibility by that extra quarter star.
we blew more than our credibility.
Yeah, we
Tyler.
Did.
Oh, don't we wish.
So, this is like a small little nitpicky thing, but usually CJ Parker comes to the ring carrying signs, right? Well, I thought it was cute that they put the signs up on the Jumbotron thingy during his intro now. Ah. So he can have more than one sign, you know?
Egomaniac.
Yeah, no. But I like that, though. I thought it looked neat. And that was about where my enjoyment ended. until the beauty shot. You know, a star. They worked a match. And
they worked a match. put that on the DVD box.
Yeah.
What did you think of Brooding Mojo on the ramp?
I was like, look, honey, you already hurt. This is not safe for you. You need to leave. Don't want to get fucked up by CJ Parker. Just saying. You've been through enough, Mojo.
He is very solemn. He's also about as pale as Crow Sting. So, you know.
Crow Joe Rowley.
Don't be putting any titles on that pale piece of shit. No tan.
It would be so funny if he was in the rafters of this tiny building. So he's like 15 feet off the ground. Just lurking at the top of the...
Lurking.
On the top of Full Sail.
He turns his back. Turns his back on the crowd.
Anyway, all right. So now we go to a very this weird whole promo. Emo Joe Rowley.
Emo Joe, yeah.
Emo Joe Rowley. But so we get this Titus promo, and so this is an interviewer we have. This is a new interviewer. I don't think they even name her, but so right from the beginning, he like makes fun of her, and she just smiles at him. Like he makes some, I forget what he says, but he pretty much makes fun of her. She just smiles. Then he starts talking about, he says, quote, that he's going to abuse Neville's body, mm-hmm. which is quite a quote. And I think he said also, like, I'm going to destroy his mind and other crap. And then we will have NXT Titus. and then so after he goes on this rant, she just makes this weird face and then just smiles again.
Yeah.
It was so weird. The whole thing was so odd. Her expressions were ridiculous. Like she just makes like this weird face and then smiles again. Like no matter what he says, she just smiles.
Pretty girls sometimes don't know what to say or do.
Girls don't have to be smooth.
It's like, what would her response be? Like, who is she? Well, mean Jean? Like, she's a pretty girl and she smiled at the camera.
Well, like, he, like, makes a dick comment to her and she's just like, that's cool.
She's going to beat him up.
She's like, rah, rah, and just
I wish more people were like Mean Gene. I wish these people wouldn't take any shit.
But yeah,
they don't let them have personality. No, it's not on her. It's just you know, she's probably coached, like, just go out there and smile, you know, a robot. It's kind of lame.
Yeah.
Sucks for her. Face. Yeah. So do you guys think he's going to abuse Neville's body?
No, I do not. Well,
I want to see him abuse his mind. I want to know what that looks like. I want to see like some astral plane battles between Titus O'Neil and Adrian Neville.
Who's got the bigger dick?
They're like conjuring swords and shit and shooting astral energy blasts at each other. Yes.
All right. We then get our, we've seen this one before. It's the Baron Corbin motorcycle that there's people like me and people like you. I'm just bred differently. So,
wow.
Stay hot for Baron Corbin. All right. We then go to the Vaudevillains who are going to be facing, I guess we can call them Team Thick now, Buddy Murphy and Wesley Blake. I really, so this was, you know, kind of a standard tag match. I like the teamwork of the Vaudevillains in this one. It kind of just went back and forth, and, you know, nothing really to write home about. The Vaudevillains win it with their kind of normal finisher and all that. But I did like Murphy and Blake in this one. I thought they looked pretty good, like they did in the last one. Mm-hmm. I would say with them, it's similar to what we saw with Becky, in that even in these losses, I feel like they're at least on our radar. They were just completely forgettable local talents. They got a little bit of shine in this one as well, which I think is good considering the, you know, we don't have much of a tag division, so we need something. So it's good they're establishing them a little bit. I like the teamwork of the Vaudevillains in this match. I thought it was really good. And overall, I just went gentleman's 2-1. I thought it was just a competitive squash, I guess we can say. Competitive enhancement match. Mm. Rather than a non-competitive.
Rather than a non-competitive enhancement match. Yeah.
Yes. Correct.
So they talk a little bit in commentary about the evolution of the Vaudevillains, which I thought was rare, insightful commentary from this team. You know, just talking about how they seem to be more intense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would agree, like, less of the comedy type stuff and more, like, real, especially on Aiden's part, like, real tight, focused matches. So that was a good point. And then this is another good showing by Team Thick. You know, I'm starting to kind of like them. So, yeah. Let's see. I really like the big flying forearm that Blake pulled off. It was good pace and good, like you said, competitive is what I wrote. Why does the crowd not like this? I don't know if it's the Vaudevillains or if it's because they just don't seem into them at all, which is dumb because this is another good match. 2.5 stars for me.
They did get the, what was it? The chant from the crowd at one point of like, that was manly or something, but yeah, they weren't, mm-hmm. The crowd wasn't super alive. They got that, but it's weird. I thought they would be more over actually.
Yeah. It might be one of those. They're not really sure how to react because the Vaudevillains are heels. Although, you know, a lot of times just an overact is just going to get cheered anyway. But with these NXT crowds, we see that there's more of a willingness to play along with what they're supposed to do. So they're not like going to straight up cheer the Vaudevillains, and yet they don't really know Blake and Murphy yet. You know, they're not mm-hmm. really established, so they might just be a little bit lost and maybe weren't expecting this to be a quote unquote real match. Mm-hmm. Maybe they just figured it'd be like a non-competitive enhancement match and would get out of there quick. But this turned out to be, you know, a decently competitive tag team match. I went 2 stars on it myself. And I do have to wonder if Blake and Murphy, if they have plans for them, if they put them together with the intent of, hey, these guys are a solid tag team, let's see where we can go with them, or if it's just one of those they caught lightning in a bottle and managed to pair up 2 random guys who weirdly have chemistry. And mm-hmm. I'm really not sure which is which. You never know with these early NXTs. You know, it's, for all we know, these guys just were like maybe working with various tag teams in the performance center, and whatever producer agent noticed, they could kind of go. Mm-hmm. Like, we could put them on television. You know, maybe that's all it is. And we're just going to continue to follow their progression. There's like, I kind of like when teams come together organically like that, when there isn't mm-hmm. necessarily a pro wrestling story that's, you know, given to their formation. It's just, they just kind of randomly team up and, you know, magic happens sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think unofficially they met on the outback farms of Australia.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Working on the ranch,
but, the ranch hands. You know, yeah.
But that might just be our own, you know, fanfic that we've created.
I will believe that, but only if it's a tarantula ranch. Oh, okay. Tarantula farm.
Well, do we believe that they are lovers or no? I can see it.
Like a Brokeback Mountain situation?
Yeah, that's about to say.
Getting your needs met on the road type situation.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, probably.
All right, sweet.
We'll go with that.
I like how we just made them an entire backstory.
Yeah.
All right, so we go to our next match, which is going to be another four horsewomen matchup of Sasha. Oh my God. I'm a choker like Sammy. Fuck. Sasha and Bayley. So Bayley starts out with her kind of, I like Bayley's little face flurries that she has, her little fire ups, I think are really good. And she has a good one to start off. But then Sasha gains control again, though, with the thrashing. She really has to work on some more offense besides just like her main moves. Like she needs some transition stuff because I don't know, she doesn't really do strikes. It's just all flinging her arms at people. But anyway, Albert and Alex are having this like heated argument about whether wins matter while during this almost the entirety of this match.
What the fuck are we doing?
Yeah, they were just talking about something like, you know, well, I think Bayley's been doing well. It's like, no, she's not. She's losing everything. And they, like, we're screaming at each other. It was really weird.
It doesn't matter if she loses everything.
Yeah, strange. But yeah, Bayley kind of fires up again, but she is actually cut off by Sasha, who then goes for her her sequence of the backstabber to the bank statement, and Bayley actually taps, which leads me to believe that I feel like they're almost going with like a parallel thing with Bayley, where they're trying to kind of beat her down to build her back up, kind of like Sammy, like because it's a, you know, that's kind of her character. But I was kind of surprised because Bayley's been presented as much more strong, even though I know she just got like multiple title shots. So I guess it makes sense to maybe give somebody else a little bit of shine. But I thought the match was pretty good, but it's still held down. I feel like Sasha's matches right now are just always going to be held down by her kind of lack of hashtag moves. So I went, I gave it the gentleman's too, Jenny.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I, you know, it's not a Charlotte match, but it's a me becoming interested in Bayley as a wrestler match. So, you know, she's pretty aggressive in this, and there's none of the cutesy stuff. Like, she's not trying to hug anybody. You know, she's just, like, came to fucking beat down on Sasha, and she sure does try. You know, there's sort of, like, shades of, like, future goodness here, greatness even, allegedly. But just with, like, with Becky, I feel like it's real clear, but with Sasha, it's still not coming through yet. You know what I mean? Like, we've seen it with Charlotte, and now with, like, to me, I think Becky looks way stronger than Sasha does. But Bayley, you know, you're right. She's had a couple shots now. I wasn't surprised by her loss. But maybe they want to do the Sammy thing. I mean, I don't know that she could. She's not as good an actor as Sammy is, so I don't know if she can kind of sell that. But there's some post-match stuff that I factored in with my grading, so I did 2 3/4 stars.
Gotcha.
Okay. Post-match stuff. I thought this match was real similar to the Sasha Becky match we talked about earlier, just in terms of its structure, with the notable difference being that Sasha does get a bit more shine in this one. But yeah, to everyone's comments about her kind of lack of offense, that's all very true. And then the abrupt finish, I mean, it works here again, but it's the exact same finish as that Becky match with the, you know, backstabber into bank statement. It is as effective as it is. It feels a little bit samey. Mm-hmm. It's surprising to me that Sasha is trailing the other horsewomen. She's, you know, kind of firmly in last place. Not that she's terrible, not that her matches are unwatchable by any means, but I don't remember that being the case because, man, I just think back to like 2014, 2015 NXT fandom, and it was like all Sasha all the time. That's who people were talking about. That's who had all the buzz. I mean, her and Charlotte, you know, were kind of neck and neck. And so I'm just sort of waiting for Sasha to turn it on. I'm waiting for that, for it to click.
Yeah,
and,
me too.
Mm-hmm. I feel like we've been saying that about her, and I feel like we kind of thought that she rounded that corner at one point and maybe has regressed a little bit for some reason. And I don't know what that's about. So yeah, I've been surprised, but I'm just mostly just curious because I do know that she gets there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, all the more interested now in tracking and like microanalyzing every little thing about Sasha Banks now, just as a fan of hers.
That's how I feel about Bayley.
Yeah. Well, and you said it kind of clicked for you with Bayley after that Charlotte match, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Were you, I mean, you always were on board with Charlotte, and now you're like, sort of turning into a Bayley mark.
Yeah,
and
I've never really been super into Bayley, so I'm open to, you know, I'm not going to have any bias, so I'm going to let it
my happen. Yeah, and you know what? My appreciation for Bayley has really grown in watching these 2014 shows, just seeing how early how mature of a wrestler she was from such an early time period. I'm like, you know, she's really kind of underappreciated. I can see that now that she's a bit slept on. And Bayley and Sasha are just such natural antagonists. Mm-hmm. They always, you know, they take on different dynamics, certainly over the years. But I like the mean girl versus the nice girl stuff that they do without beating us over the head with it and being stupid about it, you know?
Yeah,
it almost feels like Sasha and Charlotte are in kind of opposite positions of what maybe the narrative would lead you to believe. Or not that Charlotte was, but I guess it's like we're surprised at how Sasha's kind of taking longer than we thought to click. And then Charlotte's like, I don't know if I remember her clicking this quick, where she's gotten this good, this fast. Because
it's like, the other like when they were doing the BFFs.
There. Yeah. Yeah. Like during the BFFs, she's a little rough, but like it didn't take long for her to kind of step it up to the next gear. And now she's really like, you know, getting to the Charlotte that we would know for the next, you know, 5 years or whatever. So, yeah, it's one of the most interesting things about watching these is just seeing how they all progress for sure. But speaking of, so Jenny alluded to the post-match. So the post-match, of course, Sasha beats up Bayley after the match. Becky comes in for the save, but in a swerve, bro, Becky kicks Bayley and turns on her. So it seems that Becky listened to Sashi, as I called her earlier, her her pleads to get meaner and has kind of taken her advice and left Bayley as, you know, I guess maybe the lone quote unquote nice girl, if you will. And Sasha gives a sarcastic clap at this.
So I did not see that coming. I probably should have, but I thought it was well done.
Yeah, I didn't see it either. Coming.
I didn't see it coming either. And then I remembered, oh, that's right. Becky was hanging out with Sasha for a minute there. And just one of those details I completely forgot. And I'm like, oh, this is so cool because hello, it's actual character development for our women's division.
But it doesn't feel like, because at the end they say like, is this Best Friends Part 2 or whatever? I just don't feel like it's not that same vibe.
Yeah.
It's more deadly.
What a stupid comment too.
I know. Yeah. Asshole.
No. I think it's kind of a good, I think it works too to have Bayley almost be like on her own too. Yeah. Like there's nobody she can really. Yeah. And it's weird because Charlotte at this point doesn't come off as like a super heel anymore. She's kind of just a badass who maybe she's is heelish. It. Just yeah, like she's just, I guess, heelish by default just because she's kind of, you know, into herself and not like a, you know, like a Bayley type character. Mm-hmm. But definitely Sasha comes off as like the top heel now. But I think it's good if you're trying to push Bayley as this, you know, underdog that now she's all alone. She has nobody who's even close to being her ally or anything. And so she's going to have to like figure it out. So that's cool. But we should speak about our latest addition to our women's division here, which is Carmella. She's on her phone bragging about making a chick tap out, which I thought was fun. She was like, just the idea of like someone being on the phone talking about their match is kind of funny.
Oh, fuck, but I would be doing that 100%.
Yeah, somebody just like, yeah, yeah, let me just chick tap out. And then Enzo's trying to get her attention to tell her that Regal got her a match with Emma. So apparently Emma's going to be back. I think that's who they said, right? Wasn't it Emma? It was kind of hard to hear, but I thought she said Emma. But and then she kind of she bails on Enzo and Cass. And so they've been building this thing that she always kind of gives Cass a kiss goodbye, but she will not touch Enzo. And so Cass keeps trolling him. Like in this one, then he goes, denied, bro. So, kind of a funny interaction that they're having.
Love all
Enzo
of it.
Getting rejected.
Yes.
I'll tell you what I'll tell you what I'm struck by here is 2014 feels like the waning days of that time period when you were only allowed to have one women's feud on screen at the same time, right? And already here in NXT, we're seeing different lanes just to underscore the depth of this division. You've got all the horsewomen main event level stuff, as I kind of think of it. And here you've got off to the side, like Carmella being this new addition to the roster. And apparently they're going to be setting up some feuds for her. And it's just totally independent of all the, you know, Sasha, Charlotte, Bailey, Becky stuff. But feels, you know, very natural. It's the way it should be. And they don't have to make a big deal about it. Just put it out there, let it get over, or let it fall on its face, if that's going to be its fate. But it's just nice to see that we don't have just the, oh, cookie cutter women's wrestling stuff. You guys go, now you go. You know, everybody gets a turn, that kind of bullshit. Mm-hmm. Like, you can have lots of things happening at the same time if the division actually has some depth to it and you have an actual bench of talent, which they are establishing.
Can't wait to see her added to all that, too.
Mm-hmm. Like, in another era, I think Carmella would end up just being, like, their hot manager, you know?
Yep.
That would probably be what they would have done in the past. And, well, I mean, we've seen her do one match with one move, and she's probably better than Enzo in the ring already based on that 10 seconds.
Right.
So, good for her. But with that, we will go to our main event, which is going to be our world champion, Adrian Neville, against Titus, which this will be for the NXT title. So we'll see if Titus will be able to finally take over NXT. Neville frustrates him early with his quickness until Titus rams him into the corner. Neville takes a nasty bump, getting pushed off the ropes into the ramp. I thought that was pretty sick. He slammed it pretty hard. Neville gets the multiple backbreakers from Titus, and I was always feeling like Titus was maybe a little bit better in this one than he was in the Sammy match, like doing a little bit more here, like with this backbreaker. He puts him in the bear hug and kind of ragdolls him around, which I thought had a little more life than his other bear hug. So he's looking like he's doing a bit more in this one. Nothing super impressive, but Neville starts laying in the kicks to gain some momentum and take Titus off his feet until Titus comes back and rocks him with a big boot. So again, hey, check it out. He's got some moves. Titus is going. Good for you. Neville gets the knees up in the corner to kind of take him off his feet again, then goes up for the red arrow and wins it with that. So I definitely thought this was a better effort from Titus. You know, he didn't actively suck as much in this match, I feel like. And I just feel like they worked a bit better together than Sammy and Titus. I don't know if it's just because, you know, Neville's like a smaller guy, but he is fucking Jack. So maybe he kind of has the power and can kind of hang with him more. And it just seemed like it worked better. It moved a bit quicker. I don't know. I just enjoyed a good bit. So I went a touch higher. I went 2.75 on this one compared to what I went on the Sammy match. But yeah, I'm glad Neville won. And this will, I hate to say, we keep saying like these people are going to leave, but this kind of seems like it should be the end of the Titus tour.
The Titus tour.
So we'll see.
Yeah, I liked seeing Titus a bit more active in this match than he was in his outing with Sammy, and it just had more urgency to it for whatever reason. I don't know if maybe Titus got a talking to backstage or something. Somebody said, you know, you got to really step it up here. But this definitely was a damn sight better than that that Sami Zayn match. And I mean, Neville is just, you know, the total package at this point. And with all due respect to Lex Luger, like, Neville is just incredible.
If you're listening, Lex, don't be mad.
I love the pink and black tights also that he's got going on.
Yes.
In this match. So he looked great here, and just another solid win. Like, just another notch on his belt, basically beating these guys that come down from the main roster from time to time and think they're somebody, but nope. Neville sends them packing, which is just what you want from a strong fighting champion. So, and that's absolutely what Neville is here. This broke the 2-star barrier for me for Titus matches. I went 2.25 on it.
All right. Well, I'm going to do the 2.5. You know, Neville's quickness, it's just amazing. He just, like you said, he's jacked as shit. He should not be able to do the things that he can do at all, like with his bulk, but he just feels like a tiny guy. But like, if we're talking proportions, he's built exactly like Titus. You know what I mean? Like, just a smaller version. But he just runs circles around him, as he should. Titus has a lot of good strength though. And, like you said, it was a better showing for him. Again, I did like the bear hug. He was doing a really good job at, I think Neville's a little bit smaller, so we can kind of get a better grip on him. But Neville just like fucking bumping around like crazy and selling like crazy. And I mean, he's awesome and has like low key become a favorite wrestler. I don't know. 2.5, I guess, is all right, but I want to give Neville like all the stars.
I know. 5-star wrestler.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's awesome. He looks like a fucking like Street Fighter character or something.
Yeah, physically. Yeah.
It's insane. Yeah, he's super impressive. Everything he, like, I feel like it just adds something to his matches. Just his insane athleticism.
I agree.
It's just crazy. Yeah. He's awesome. But
It's not enough for him to just run the ropes or beg off from a guy or something. He's got to do like 9,000 flips across the ring, and which just so awesome. You know,
it's amazing.
The momentum always carries him out of the ring sometimes when he really gets going. I'm like, God, how is this guy not just a gigantic superstar for them?
Yeah. Focus on that red arrow. I mean, he was getting knocked around pretty good. So it was like, it was beautiful camera work, actually. It was like kind of pretty much, it wasn't a pullback shot on the red arrow to begin with. It was close up when he was climbing, and he just like settled, like, I'm fitting to fuck this guy up. And then it was beautiful. Just amazing stuff by him.
And for all the crazy stuff he does, it's like nothing ever is even like an inch off. It's all so tight and perfect. Yeah, it's insane. Yeah. It's wild. Yeah, he's awesome. He's been really fun to watch on these shows. But he, like, at one point he had Titus like in a headlock and he was just pulling him down. And even though he's like 5'7", you believe it because he's just made of pure muscle. So you kind of believe he could drag this giant man down. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we get so our post-match angle, after the match, Sami comes out and congratulates him, but then reiterates that he's on a mission to take the title. Neville says that he'll give him a shot if he wants a shot, so he agrees to it. Sami says that he won't have it much longer, and then Neville, of course, comes back at him with the choker line, saying that Sami will not be able to win the big one. So really building the storyline that Sami Zayn cannot win the big one. So certainly seems like, I mean, our fingers are crossed, but let's hope that this is where we're going for TakeOver, because this is the TakeOver main event I feel like we've probably been wanting for a really long time with these two.
Yes.
Give it to us.
All right.
Give me what I want.
What I want. All right. So we wrap up this one. Another pretty solid episode, I thought. I think I liked the last one a bit better, but this one was still pretty good. Good main event. Some good stuff going on the undercard, even if I had a few hiccups like the dumb Atami stuff and having an ascension match. But I still
having ascensions.
Yeah,
the ascension existing.
Yeah, the ascension. You know, unless you just didn't watch it, then maybe you don't have to worry about it.
Well, oh,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I give it an 8.
Yeah, but I went 5. I went 5 out of 10 on this one, kind of right down the middle. Right. Solid show.
I mean, to me, I thought the last 3 matches were very good. Well, not very good, but definitely good for what we're doing here on NXT TV. So I'm at 6.5.
I'm similar to Jake. I didn't like this as much as the previous episode, but better than our first episode. So that puts it at, we'll give it a 5.
Okay.
Very good. At least if, I feel like we are building some things, which is good.
Yes.
A lot of times I feel like we watch these and it just feels like nothing is just fucking crap. Happening.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's slow, right? But that's what... Mm-hmm. That's what we're in for on this stuff is the long form storytelling. So,
yeah, I mean,
yeah,
you got a weekly wrestling show that it has to exist. I mean, we can't take a week off because do you know what would happen, guys, if you took a week off?
What would happen?
It would be a week that they took off.
Yeah. Can't have that shit.
Can't have. We must have content. Content.
People might. People might forget that they like wrestling in a week.
Content at all costs.
Oh my God, I'm watching that Red Arrow again.
Yeah, I literally just saw it. I just saw it too.
The hype is just.
He never does that, you know. Jake, you'll appreciate the TNA move of doing a moonsault across somebody's legs.
That's exactly what I had in my mind. Yeah. Like. Never, like, so many people who try and do that kind of stuff, it always just looks like a little sloppy, they land weird, or it's not, you know, it's not super tight. And he also has that, like, that kind of Eddie Guerrero thing where he's almost, like, launching himself down when he's doing it, too. But anyway, we're just having a big Nola fest, which he deserves it. But
he'd be a multi-time world champion, honestly.
Yeah.
Bunch of bullshit. So, yeah, it's, like... We can't take a week off from weekly television. However, we do have only a handful of takeovers throughout the year. You know, it's just a quarterly event. So you kind of feel that stretch between these big super cards.
For sure.
And they can spin their wheels sometimes to get there, it seems like. But I don't know. Maybe that'll get better over time. We will find out.
And hopefully it'll all pay off when we do get to it, which, all right. Best match. I have Sammy and Tyson.
I do too.
I believe that was probably, well, I think Bayley and Sasha probably got the same numbers. I don't think I never gave anything a 3. Good Lord. No, that
critical
was
critical as fuck. Jesus.
Oh, God. What am I even thinking? I'm going to give it to, Sammy and Tyson.
All right. Worst match, I went with Baron Corbin's squash match.
All the essential matches.
Let's see. There's like the lowest rated match, and there's the match that I hated the most. Those are always a little bit... in contention sometimes.
Go with the hate. Let the hate flow.
Yeah,
through.
Yeah. Think of it as
probably that ascension. The jerk offs versus the ascension.
Right.
Which is again not my lowest rated match, but my lowest rated match, I mean I had a dud, but it wasn't even really a match. But other than that, everything I gave like at least half a star, but most of those half a stars are by definition, it existed non-competitive enhancement talent match. So, Jerkoffs versus the Ascension was offensive.
Not a bad choice. Rising. So I have the Vaudevillains Rising. I have Sammy, if he's finally truly going to be elevated to the main event. And I have Becky for short on these.
Becky.
I would add Team Thick.
Team Thick.
Yes, yeah. Let's add Team Thick.
Anyone else ascending?
Enzo and Cass for me.
Carmella?
Yeah, Carmella. I mean,
Carmella, yeah, Carmella.
Little triad. Good.
Yep.
Which I think this is a test of, like we said, it seems like they're getting kind of focused, that we have this many people who seem to be moving. Falling. Poor Mojo. He's definitely falling.
Oh, boy.
Titus.
Titus, for sure. Yeah.
The Legionnaires.
The Legionnaires. The Ascension, for sure.
Bluey.
Marcus Louis.
Bless him.
I feel like I just had somebody else in my head that's falling.
Hideo Itami.
That's who I was thinking. Yeah, it's Itami. Yeah. It's not necessarily his fault, but
it is to this point. I mean, maybe it wasn't the first couple times, but like Jesus, come on.
They need to put him with someone else. Yeah, I think we got our falling. The Ascension.
Can Elias fall any farther? No. I mean, it's just
fall with Elias.
I forgot he was here. MVP. This is a tricky one. I went with Sammy, but just because I guess he got so much time and stuff. But I could see an argument for Neville, too.
I'm going to say Sammy just because it feels like the show is sort of converging around him now. And it's becoming like his story that's going to propel probably our next few weeks of television. So we're going to have to see how well he carries that ball.
Yeah, I mean, this little group of episodes was like very Sammy focused. So he's got to be our MVP.
LVP, I'm going to go with the Ascension, who at this point we might be able to name this like the Ascension Award. They win it like every week. And then finally, we have best moment. I was kind of stuck on this. I was trying to think of a moment, like, I don't know, Sammy telling him to go cry about Total Divas. I don't know.
The debut of Blue Pants.
The wig snatch was pretty good.
Wig snatch. Mojo's promo.
Emojo.
Got a lot of options here.
Damn, yeah, there are. Funaki stretcher job.
ladies and gentlemen, we are not sure about the status of Funaki. You know what? I think I'm going to go with the last thing from the last episode. The like Sammy Neville kind of little interaction.
Okay, that's probably going to leave. Sammy save.
Becky's turn.
Becky's turn.
Obviously really stuck with this.
Look.
I know. It's a lot. Becky's turn. Going on. Yeah, I think Becky's turn. I think you're right, Tim. It's going to have the most lasting effect. Let's go with that. I like Becky's turn. Good on us. But that wraps us up.
So stupid to not get there.
Right.
Whatever. What do we have going on, Jenny? What's going on in your pod world?
In my pod world. So I have a podcast feed called The Jenny Position. Bunch of shows on there. You can listen to the newest Geek and Sassy. It's our 50th episode, finally. We've only been recording together for like 178 years, but we finally get to talk to each other, me and Miranda, so that's a good one. You heard about Pluto. Should have a new one of those with me and Pete Winston talking family ties. That's fun. Pete knows everything about family ties. Soon you can hear a new Hot Tokes with me and Vanessa. And if you want more of my wrestling stuff, you can find it on the North-South Connection with TNA Never Dies. And hopefully the returning three-way dance. Should be very soon on that. And talking WCW right here on Place to Be Wrestling. Follow me on Twitter at Jenny Position.
Awesome. Well, I am a part of the aforementioned Talking WCW with Jenny right here on Place to Be Nation Wrestling. I told you all about Pop Goes to the Couch, which I have been a fixture of for the past few weeks now. I'll probably be taking a break from that as we take a break from Marvel shows and, turn our focus to other things. Depending on what that is, I may or may not be a regular on that. But we'll be back once the Marvel shows come back in full force. Do check out the Jenny position, as Jenny told you all about, where I have some presence there as well. More Marvel-related stuff on the Jenny position, that being the Journey Through Infinity, myself and Jenny, JT Rosero, and Scott Criscolo, chronologically going through all the films of the MCU. Very cool stuff. Jenny, you and I do Talk and Pop. We're going to have a new Talk and Pop with the guest that we have chosen.
Yep.
one who has been campaigning to be on the show.
Well, who hasn't?
Who hasn't? We finally decided it's time for his call up. So that's the extent of the hints I'll give you. The only clue, it's a he. But that'll be coming your way pretty soon. Our sister podcast network is the North-South Connection, where I have recently begun a regular show with JT Rosero called 9021 No-So. Kind of what it sounds like. It's us watching the original Beverly Hills 90210 episode by episode. So we're just really on just recorded episode 4 with our guest Drew Wardlaw. So that was a lot of fun to do. Drew's a great guest. It's entitled The First Time. So which first time could that be referring to? Well, if you're a fan of 90210, you may know. If you're not, get on board. Watch along with us. Get in on the action. Let us know if you want to do an episode. It's a show that we're going to try to have guests for each episode, so it's not just me and JT. And certainly we're open to have repeat guests as well. So people are contacting Justin, running up to him at the airports even, and saying, I got to get in on 90210 No-So. Put me down for season 1, episode 16. I don't know why they want to do that one, but people have their favorites. But yeah, check that out as well. You can follow me on Twitter. I am at Psych68. CY, what's so funny?
I just got that joke.
CYKE68 on Twitter. Who's joking? This is a very serious podcast.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry.
And that's all for me.
I feel like that 90210 pod is like the pod you were put on this earth to do, Tim. So I'm glad.
Well, no, that's Talk and Pop.
Sorry. that too.
I am protective of my Tim.
Well, there can be more than one. I mean... Mm.
Talent wars going on here.
No, there cannot.
As for me, check out the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast on the No So feed. Pretty soon, I'm going to force Jenny to do the infamous culmination of the Katie Vick story.
Oh my God!
I don't know what that means, but I'm in.
Oh, look, it's a very put it this way. It is famous for a lot of people saying that it's the moment when they quit watching. So
got that cool. Well, I'll probably love it.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens then. But that wraps up for PTB NXT. You can join us in about a month's time where we will be back at full sail for 3 more episodes of this wonderful wrestling program. And we'll see. Is Sami Zayn a choker? Will Bayley be able to come back from this turn by Becky? Will Mojo heal his shoulder and get revenge?
And descend from the rafters.
Yes, but until then, how about it? See you later.
PTB NXT has left the building.
I better to be safe than sorry.